Hey, y'all. Welcome to another episode of Soccer for Us. I am Bart, and joining me on this episode to talk a lot about a lot of U.S. soccer goings-on, I have the good friend from Maine, the majestic, what do you call that? The Atlantic Northeast? Majestic New England. It's U.S. keeper on Twitter, Thomas in real life. Thomas, how are you doing today? How does it feel to go through our possibly third coach in 6 months at the U.S. men's national team level?
Yeah, it's things are good here. It's unfortunate that they have to go through another transition before the real manager is hired. So hopefully, you know, the talent will lead this team to a successful summer.
Yeah, talent is going to be key this summer. Luckily, a man who is not short on talent, but maybe short in real life, it's Joey Logan. Joey, thanks for joining us again. Glad to have you back here on Soccer for Us. It's been a while.
Yeah, man, sorry for the delay. Life got busy, yada, yada, yada. Referee season, all that kind of stuff. Coaching two teams this past year. Just a lot going on. Thanks for the short comment, by the way. Never goes unfunny. So. But no, it's all good. Good to be back with the boys. Talk about some U20 and who the hell is BJ. But anyway.
Well, someone who may or may not have some experience with a man named BJ, I don't know. Caleb Cook from USMNT Corner is joining us. Caleb, I feel like you might be next in line. If you just keep at it, you'll eventually get your spot at the U.S. men's national team gig.
I mean, look, you know, it's just natural steps, right? You go from academy to high school to U.S. men's national team senior head coach. I mean, it is just
that is not unsimilar to what BJ Callahan did.
I mean, my gosh. But, you know, what are you going to do, right? Gotta love it.
Well, we will talk in full about the transition from Anthony Hudson to BJ Callahan, a very stark and sudden change. But before we do that, we have some U20 action to talk about, so let's dive into that right now. The real headlines in U.S. soccer right now are the fact that the U.S. men's U20 team is dominating down in Argentina at the U20 World Cup. 4 wins, 0 goals conceded, 10 goals scored. Thomas, this has been fun to watch.
Yeah, I've taken it all in. It's been awesome. The teams look pretty well. I think defensively in the midfield, they look great. Attack is probably the one area where they've scored goals, but they've definitely, you know, missing a little bit something there, but they're finding ways to get those late game goals to kind of seal those victories for them.
Yeah, definitely. It's been weird to watch them struggle with scoring because I think we just know that like there's not a real striker on the field, but there's been a lot of other impressive performances and talent. Caleb, I mean, who do you think has kind of stood out the most from the 4 games down there in Argentina?
With no goals given up, I think you have to bring up Gaga Slonina. I mean, just he's come up big when he's had to. There haven't been a ton of moments, but he, you know, and that's tough for a keeper to be there and not being tested all the time. You got to be ready. And he's made some big saves. And then, I mean, you know, Thomas just talked about the midfield. I'll talk about Jack McGlynn real quick. I mean, my man crush on that kid has just grown massively. That kid's vision is just insane. His passing ability is drool worthy. And then Diego Luna, I mean, the way that he sees the field, his movement, his passing, it's just, gosh, this team is just so fun to watch when there's no weak spots, you know, like everybody can play with the ball. Everybody wants the ball and it's just so refreshing.
I mean, yeah, the weak spot is finishing, but it's not necessarily attacking talent. We've created plenty of chances. You know, it's been frustrating to not score on all of them, but we've definitely created chances. Joey, I know that we have, as an Atlanta United fan, you're proud of Caleb Wiley. I do want to give you an opportunity to brag on him. I mean, he got a goal, but he just has been so solid all tournament.
Yeah, Caleb Wiley is steadily becoming into his own. Reminds me, obviously, the rise of George Bello. We're seeing kind of a carbon copy of that, you know, starts at a left back. And honestly, when Caleb Wiley comes back, I really hope he goes straight back into the team because we need him so much from Lane United. That's another question of the day. But, yeah, Caleb Wiley is impressing. Kate Cowell, we've talked about him, you know, through Twitter messages and such like that. You know, he's just chaos everywhere. But it's a good kind of chaos, and he's just – I don't know, he's showing out this U-20 World Cup, and, you know, obviously heard about him from San Jose at the MLS, but I don't think he hits that kind of star privilege or star power that he gets, you know, in MLS that he's getting right now on the world stage. No, Caleb Wiley is awesome, man. I'm glad he's, you know, a five-stripe, and, you know, hopefully his career just blossoms. Hopefully he might break into the team in 26. Right now, he's loving life, man. He's just... Like Caleb just said, they just play so well. They play so free. Like, they're not so tense and cagey. They just play. Like, it's really impressive to see young kids not be fazed by the moment. It'll change when they give up, you know, some better competition as well. But, yeah, Caleb Wiley, Wiley Coyote, I call him. Love watching him play.
Yeah, I mean, that group chat that we have, Thomas, we've gone back and forth about the Cade Cowell experience, which is I've called him the most frustrating player on the team because there's so much good that then oftentimes gets ruined by a bad touch or a bad decision. But he's had a very productive tournament.
He has. I mean, he is frustrating. Like, it's like the thing is, and this is where I got to, you know, ground myself. He's, you know, he's very young, right? So,
yeah.
So those raw areas that he has, I think we just have to be patient as fans. And that's sometimes I lose myself in that watching the U-20s because they are pretty skilled. I mean, they're very impressive out there. And sometimes you lose that sight of that they're only U-20 players out there. When you watch the U-17s, you can definitely see their U-17 and you can
absolutely
see the real difference between that. But, and so I think, you know, for those moments, you know, and that's the composure part of it, right? That comes with experience. It comes with, you know, growth in the game. And I'm hoping, you know, he continues down that road. I mean, you know, there's rumors of transfers and hopefully he can find the right situation early in his career, as opposed to, you know, when he's, you know, in his early to mid 20s, where sometimes it's a little later to kind of make that jump.
Yeah. It's been hopeful, I think, all these players, because, and to your point, it's a lot of these guys we've seen play at the professional level for a long time. Obviously, we were talking about Caleb Wiley just a second ago. He's been a starter for Atlanta United the entire season. He started every match he was available. He started a good chunk of last season. He was playing even in 2021. Cade has been a fixture for San Jose for quite some time. You still have the Philly guys, especially like Jack McGlynn, who has been playing so much. To me, that's the biggest takeaway, is that I think, number one, this is not even the best 23, you know, U-20 talents. Like, there are other players who are better who are not in this squad. So the fact that they're performing at such high levels, it's because of their professional experience. And that goes back to the fact that MLS academies are maybe clubs in general, are doing a good job of taking kids from that academy setup and pushing them to the pro level, not too early, but when they actually show that they're ready for the professional level at MLS. And, you know, there are plenty of kids. We've got, let's see, who's not here? It's Paxton Aronson's not here. Ricardo Pepe isn't here because they're already professional, like full-fledged professional players. But you have guys like Paredes, you know, even a guy like Diego Luna, who hasn't got a whole lot of professional minutes this year. They're still playing professional ball. That, to me, is my biggest takeaway. It's just how that floor has risen so highly from even the last U-20 World Cup, where, by the way, we still made the quarterfinals. So it just feels like the group is better, and it's amazing to me because we don't even have our best U-20 players in this group. Caleb, what was your biggest takeaway you've had from the group stage in that knockout round game?
I don't know. To kind of piggyback on what you're saying, the floor has risen. We got a lot of guys that are, you know, playing. Let's just say Ricardo Pepe, for example, right? They he's not being brought in because he is fully entrenched in the senior national team. And that's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing. It speaks to the lack of depth we have at a, you know, position of need. We're talking about lack of scoring goals. Ricardo Pepi is playing for the senior national team. Yeah, he's good, but it's because we need him there. And, you know, I feel like this last, you know, 4 years have been really nice to kind of get back into having actual youth national teams, because if you think about the last 4 years, our senior team has been our youth national team. And so, you know, it's crazy to think, but that's, we're reliant on these young kids. And so I think my biggest takeaway is that we are progressing so much as a soccer nation. And we've got guys, young guys playing major minutes for big clubs. They're being used on the senior national team, yet we still have enough talent to have this U20 team, and they're dominating, playing really well. But again, you know, we talk about this, the position of need, striker. I think Cade Cowell probably needs to be there. I understand why he's not. I know why Diego Luna is playing that kind of, you know, removed striker, false nine type position. The Mike Ivaras really, really wants him there. He's pulling strings. Like, it's incredible to watch. But I think Cowell's probably going to end up being a striker. And then you've got a kid in Carol Figueroa coming up who I think can fill and start pushing to where we can start having a pipeline of guys that can put the ball in the back of the net, because we've been talking and singing praises of all these kids and the talent that we're seeing. But yeah, we've scored goals. I think maybe it's because of lack of talent that we're playing against, lack of opposition. But I feel like that's still something we need. And I don't know, maybe every team, every country talks about this. We need a guy that can score goals. I mean, that's soccer, right?
Yeah, that's the hard part. But hey, look, we've still got 10 goals out of the 4 games we played. You know, now comes the question, you know, Joey, who do you think from this team, like, if you were to say, hey, this guy right now is ready for the senior squad, who do you think from this team at the U20s is ready to go? And maybe not a starter, but, like, is actually could make that squad at the senior level?
Honestly, I'd really like to see Diego Luna get in there just to see how he would react to that situation. He may still be, you know, a little raw at times, but like Caleb was saying, he's really been pulling the strings. He's been making things happen since he came in. I wish he got more minutes, to be honest, in the first couple of games. But he's come in and kind of starting to earn his spot. You know, and of course, I want to see my boy Caleb Wiley, but I think he'll be pushed back to a left wing back role or a right wing back role, whichever. I think he can play both. So those two players I'll highlight on. Those are obviously one of the popular players. But if I can just touch on the defense, because zero goals. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, we've got also, you know, defenders who take their time. They're not, like, frantic back there. They're taking the ball down, finding a pass. We're not just like the old days where it comes to the center back, you just boots it wherever. You know, we don't have that anymore. We're actually controlling it. We're playing with it. We're trying to find the playmakers. We're trying to find the key passes, trying to find the counterattack point. Probably the best goal, you know, from the team came from a freaking corner kick, and then he's on the run. Diego Luna starts it, and we go the other way, and, you know, a frantic finish with Kate Cowell, but still, you know, started from the back. I mean, it started back from a defensive, you know, header. So, really impressive with the zero goals allowed. Now, again, as I said before, we're going to be playing some more skilled teams and some better, you know, more powerful countries. So, can we stop their striker, one, and can we slow down or minimize the creative midfielder, whoever that may be, and not allow, you know, leaky goals or soft goals like, you know, senior teams have in the past?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point about the competition that we played. I mean, I don't think we've played anyone really that, I don't know, difficult. But look, we've got an opportunity here. We're going to play Uruguay on Sunday at 5 p.m. That's Sunday, June 4th, 5 p.m. Thomas, I mean, yeah, we haven't played the toughest competition, but I would argue that we haven't really looked that under duress at any point. So, I mean, is the quarterfinal good enough? I mean, is that going to be indicative of this team's performance? What do you make of where we have to go from here?
Well, I mean, we've seen this group make it to the quarterfinals the last three times they've been there, right? So, right. I mean, I think then it's – the problem is it's always a different group. So, I mean, it's – you want to see progression. I mean, I'm not sure if winning the U-20 World Cup means anything for the national team. You know what I mean? I think the goal is you know, to – you know, get more exposure to these players, you know, allow them to have the opportunity to play at bigger clubs. And that's going to help grow the player pool along the way. So in the respect of advancing, you know, it's getting that exposure. And so I think that's the key, right? I think we've got to get that next level, because if you get to the semis, then you automatically have two games.
Yeah.
Right. So that's you've maxed out how many games you can play in the tournament. And I think for these players, I think that's, you know, what we need to see. And Uruguay has 2 days rest. We've had, you know, the U.S. has had a lot more.
We're going to get five days rest after.
Right. We've seen that in the past. We've got two players who are coming to the team who have, you know, great ability and skill. So I mean, really, you know, we can't have too many excuses. They just have to go out there and perform. And I think it's a winnable game. I think, you know, their first match
they played Iran the first match and kind of destroyed them, I think, is what I remember.
No, was that
someone else?
No, it was someone else. They played South American team. Why am I such an E? Why am I blanking?
I know they played.
It's a game that Gomez scored the goal in extra time.
Oh, our team. Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about our team.
Yeah.
We played Ecuador in the first match. Sorry.
Right. So that Ecuador game, I think that was a good, you know, a good stepping stone to kind of what we're probably going to see, that type of game, right? And I think they've grown since then. I really think they need to take it to that next level. They've done it for so long. I mean, and this group here has played very well on all ends of the ball. I really want to see them take that next step to get that, you know, some of that additional exposure, because it helps everything, right, along the way. And this, you know, it's a great tournament. There's decent quality in it. I've watched, you know, as many matches that are televised. So,
Well, that's been the struggle, is making sure you know which television stations is on. I know I struggled with that the first game. Switching gears, though, to another U-20 tournament, the U.S. women's U-20 team down in the Dominican Republic for the CONCACAF Women's U-20 Championship. This is important because the top three teams go automatically to the Women's U-20 World Cup next year. We don't know where that is yet, but U.S. into the knockout round after an undefeated group stage. Really, the only match that was of consequence was the game against Canada. They beat them 5-2. Always fantastic to beat Canada. Now they play Costa Rica on Friday, June 2nd at 6 p.m. If they win, they're into the final at 3 p.m. on Sunday. If they lose, they play in the third place match / that final qualification spot for the U-20 World Cup at noon on Sunday. So again, top three teams qualify, which means if you win that semi, you're automatically there. If you don't, then you got to play the consolation match. But look, I'll be honest, I didn't learn anything necessarily because the U.S. women dominated. We had a pair of like 4-0 wins. That Canada game was, what I learned from it was that the team was still able to respond because they went up, I think it was 3-0 at the end of the first half. Gave up a goal to Canada early in the second half, but then responded by scoring and end up winning 5-2. So to me, the lesson was that, hey, they were challenged a little bit. They responded well. But, you know, hey, now the tournament starts, right, Thomas? Now is when you're playing Costa Rica, a team and a program that has been pretty good on the women's side. You win that, you're into the U-20 World Cup next year. That's what matters.
Yeah, I mean, look – you know, they've done very well. I think Costa Rica is beatable for the U.S. to beat them. But Mexico is playing pretty damn well in this tournament too. So they're no slouch, sure.
I'm finally ready for, and look, I'm not going to ever want Mexico to actually be good at soccer, but I'm ready for the investment into the women's game in soccer to actually pay off down in Mexico. And maybe we're seeing that with this youth tournament. I don't know, but I'm with you. Like, Costa Rica is a winnable match. And I don't think whoever we play in the final I think we should beat them as well. Obviously, that's the standard the U.S. women have. But hey, you know, let's remember that these are still also U20s, and a lot of times in the women's game especially, that development comes later. We're seeing a lot more of younger players get into that professional level, which is great, but they're not even at this tournament. You have multiple U20 eligible professionals still with their NWSL club. I mean, Alyssa Thompson's one of them who's probably freaking go if she better, and in my mind anyway, better be going to the Senior World Cup this summer. You've got others at that U20 level who aren't there because, again, they're playing professional minutes. So it's nice to see these girls that I haven't been exposed to in terms of, like, I haven't seen them play as much because, you know, they're either college or, like, club or academy level players. But, you know, I think there's only so much you can truly take from this tournament in terms of what the future looks like. But, look, some really good performances. Madeline Dalian is having a really decent tournament. She's tied with the league with like 4 goals. Senator has 2 goals, and we've got a bunch of other girls with 2 goals. So it's good. I'm just not, there's only so much you can learn from it. So that's our U20 talk. We got more games coming up. As I said, USA, Uruguay, on Sunday, June 4th, 5 p.m. And again, USA, Costa Rica on Friday at 6 p.m. If they win that, then they play Sunday at 3 p.m. So let's put a bow on that, everyone, and turn our attention to the U.S. men's senior team. Some news has come out. but the big news, really, the news that really matters is the CONCACAF Nations League roster has dropped. And this kind of gives us a good look at, and obviously we have to caveat this with the fact that we've had 2 now interim managers kind of put their heads together and put this roster together. But I think it does signal a fairly stark change in that we've turned the page to the next cycle. This roster is about half of full of players who were at the World Cup back in November. So, you know, yes, a lot of those are injury. We'll talk about that, but some new, actual legitimately new faces in this squad. Let's run through it position by position and kind of talk and break down that there. So we'll start with goalkeepers. Drake Callender from Inter Miami, Josh Cohen from Maccabi Haifa. I think 3-time Israeli Premier League champ, Josh Cohen, and then Sean Johnson from Toronto and Matt Turner from Arsenal. So, Caleb, first off, let's just, I guess, get this out of the way. Cohen is not likely going to, he won't play in the matches unless someone like drastically hurts, but he wasn't on the provisional roster. He's just there for training. But, Caleb, is this, I mean, Matt Turner is your starter, right? Is it worry you that we don't necessarily have like our favored backup? That's really the question, only one here with the goalkeepers, I think.
Well, I mean, you got to think Matt Turner's going to play all of it. And I mean, you know, keepers go, unless a keeper gets hurt, you're really not going to see the other guys. So fingers crossed, knock on wood, Matt Turner stays healthy. He's good to go. But I mean, I'm not worried. I know we saw Zach Steffen post on Instagram, like his leg, like, wrapped up. I don't really know exactly what happened.
He had surgery. That's all we know. We don't even know what he had surgery on. We know it's knee.
It was news to me. It was just kind of out of nowhere. And then Horvath is Horvath injured? Is that right? Is that why he's not being called? Or so, what's going on with Horvath?
Thomas, I don't know if I didn't really see an actual like reason, but injury was the reason. I just don't know if anyone actually knew what the reason was.
Yeah, I had heard of
celebrating.
I mean, yeah, he played a game like less than a week ago. How'd he get hurt?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I heard he was, you know, had a little tweak, but he's not even on the provisional for Gold Cup. So I think it's probably more significant enough to.
Yeah. Weird. It's weird. But hey, look, I think Thomas, you and I would agree that Matt Turner is the number one. I mean, is Sean Johnson a okay backup? I mean, he's done it fairly well, but I don't know. He's had a, I don't know if it's him having a bad season at Toronto. Toronto's just had a bad season, but I don't know. I'm not like super confident with any of the backups right now.
Yeah. It's not the, you know, the three that we would prefer to see, you know, in the position, but you know, I think Turner will take care of business in the two matches. So.
All right, well, we'll move on to defenders. Sergino Dest, still currently maybe with AC Milan. We're not quite sure what's going on there. Chris Richards at Crystal Palace, Anthony Robinson with Fulham, Miles Robinson with Atlanta United, Joe Scally with Borussia Mönchengladbach, Austin Trusty with Birmingham City, and Walker Zimmerman from Nashville SC. Now, obviously, the two questions are Mark McKenzie, John Brooks, Thomas. Are they snubs? Or are they just guys that got picked over by from someone else? I mean, what do you make of no McKenzie, no Brooks?
McKenzie shocks me. I mean, because he has just had a phenomenal season. I mean, obviously he's been scoring goals. I think what, 5 goals this season.
Yeah.
He's playing phenomenally. That one I'm not sure I understand. Brooks, I think Brooks is probably better suited for some playing time. I'd love to see him on the Gold Cup roster, so I'm okay with that, you know, from that perspective.
If he wants to come.
But I think, you know, I think that's, you know, he's had a pretty good season too. So, I mean, we, you know, some of the depth areas are starting to build up, and some decision-making is tough sometimes, I think, yeah, with that. And he just hasn't been in the mix. And I think that's probably more just a last cycle mindset, right? Well, you know, Brooks, you know, it's very, the roster isn't surprising to me, right, in general, like of the players are calling in are pretty consistent. And that's where that continuity comes in. I mean, so I think for as much as we would probably want to see, you know, certain players, you know, I think this tournament here is, you know, really, we need to focus on winning that with the players that, you know, or mix into the World Cup and that we've seen, you know, here over, you know, during the March window. So I think the McKenzie one, really, I just don't understand that one.
Yeah.
I
think for me, it's that Austin Trusty got called in over McKenzie. And I'm not even trying to like say that Austin Trusty didn't have a good season at Birmingham or isn't deserving, but I just feel like McKenzie has done better. I don't know. I'm with you. It was a little, I didn't understand it. But, you know, I think the starting three are still Richards, Robinson, and Zimmerman. So maybe that's kind of where, you know, the new coach, BJ Callahan, also saw it. I don't know. Caleb, I think where I'm actually concerned is we still don't have an actual backup left back.
Yes. So a couple things real quick with McKenzie. You got to wonder if they're not doing a favor. For Genk. They are in the playoff rounds. Genk plays Antwerp in 3 days on Sunday. So maybe that plays a role because I agree, Tom, like he's been really good. He's been really good this year, scoring goals too. Which is always nice when a center back can do that. But yeah, so maybe possibly that's somewhat of an explanation. And then as far as backup left back, you've got to imagine that Joe Scally is the backup right back and backup left back. And or the starting right back with Dest being the left back and right back backup. Either way, you have a lot of flexibility there.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that makes sense looking at the roster. So, and I'm happy with it with Caleb Wiley being U20s.
I mean, Jonathan Gomez Bill's also at the U20s. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you got a lot of things going on there. So I'm okay with it. I'm fine with it. And I fully trust Scally to play well on both sides.
Okay, fair enough. I will not be as concerned. Maybe I'm just more concerned about the existential question of what is a backup left back more than the actual reality of it. The midfielders, though, is where this roster gets a little tricky. 6 of them called up, but you'll notice a couple names, especially one big name that's not there. Johnny Cardozo from Internacional. Personally, very excited he is going to be on the full senior roster. Luca Della Torre from Celta Vigo, Weston McKennie from Leeds/Juventus, Yunus Musa from Valencia, Gio Reyna from Borussia Dortmund, and Alan Senora from Juarez. Now, obviously, the name you did not hear is Tyler Adams. That is, to me, a concern because Tyler Adams is our best defensive midfielder. The other name you didn't hear is Kellen Acosta, who BJ Callahan in the press conference today kind of signaled that he is not fully fit and they didn't want to push him into these games when he, you know, he didn't play for LAFC in probably their biggest match of the season this past week against Lyon, where they absolutely shat the bed for some reason. I don't know what that was. But anyway, Acosta and Adams both injured. So Caleb, is this, I guess my question, and this was my tweet was about this today, is I love the fact that Johnny's called up. I just don't know if the answer is put Johnny Cardozo at that sixth position or if we're going to be looking at possibly like a double pivot. Where do you see this midfield churning out?
Yeah, I mean, two things, right? One, it's kind of a blessing in disguise because we need to know what we're going to do if Adams can't play. Well, Adams can't play. Looky there. So we got to figure this out. We have to figure this out. The second thing is, for me, every time I've seen Johnny Football play, it's not been it for me. I don't get it. I don't see it. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm hoping that he sucks. I hope the kid balls out. I hope he's phenomenal. But for me, if he gets these opportunities to play, whether it's a single six or whether it's double pivot, which with Reyna being listed as a midfielder, you got to kind of think it's probably a 4-2-3-1 with a double pivot. But if Cardozo gets the opportunity and he still does not look the part, I don't know how many more times you can call this kid in. He's gotta impress, especially with Malik Tillman not being brought in as a midfielder. Four keepers.
Yeah.
There's some snubs. He got an opportunity. Again, I hope he takes it by the reins and is phenomenal. That's what I hope. But we will see.
Yeah, and I think Johnny had a very productive season with Internacional comparatively to what he kind of has had throughout the rest of his career. So he should, in theory, be in a good spot from a professional standpoint. And I'm with you. Like, he's had opportunities at multiple levels and not proven that he is the answer. Either at that, you know, slightly more attacking eight position or at the truly holding six position. Joey, this midfield, though, does have Gio Reyna. Is this the time for Gio Reyna to take over and be the true playmaker for the U.S. men's national team?
I'm kind of curious what kind of headspace Gio's in right now because he just had a heartbreaking loss with Borussia Dortmund on that final day. Honestly, didn't play many minutes down the stretch. I know he had a little injury he picked up, so I'm not sure what Gio Reyna we're going to see, to be honest. The whole, you know, previous coach Berhalter thing, the whole drama, the melodrama we had after the World Cup, I just don't know what Gio Reyna we're going to see. I would love to see, you know, what we all hoped to see from Gio Reyna, the next, you know, next star, but I'm just curious what kind of headspace he's in, to be quite honest. If it is Gio Reyna, if he gets his spotlight and gets his chance, hopefully he takes it, but he might be another player as well that, you know, if he doesn't take it now, he may not get called up again, or at least this next cycle, unless there's a, you know, devastating injury or somebody else goes out of form but on down the road. But then we just talked about the U20 pushing. So, again, does Diego Luna come up and, you know, slide in there? There's so many questions around Gio Reyna. I hate that for him, but unfortunately, we're still in the ashes of, like I said, the melodrama from the U.S. World Cup. I mean, we're just not sure what kind of player we're going to get.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we get the angry Gio who's ready to come in and dominate. You know, that's my hope. But like I said, we'll see. I mean, it's – Thomas, I think back to that March window, and he looked good considering all that had just gone down between, you know, him the former coach, his parents, and the former coach of the Federation. I mean, I think at this point we have to think that he has put that behind him. But, I mean, is he really the answer? Is he truly the attacking midfielder? Or, you know, what's the solution at midfield with Tyler Adams out?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd probably – it's either going to be Reyna and then probably McKennie, you know, Musa with a double pivot, or Luca de Tola with Musa at the double pivot. So Reyna's tough for me. Like, he's very talented, but I'm not sure where he fits in yet with this team. Is he the winger? Is he, you know, we haven't had that real attacking midfielder. You know, he's got the skill set, but I'm not sure, he didn't fit in the Berhalter system. So maybe if they give these guys more freedom to do and play, you know, and flow through, you know, and maybe that will come through. Cause I think he was too restrictive in terms of, you know, the different formations and, you know, type of style of play that Berhalter had. So he's too talented not to be able to produce, but it's got to, the team loves him. They're all behind him. So I think he's just got a breakthrough. He did well. Both he started those two March friendlies, and I think that was great. I just think he needs to get a couple goals just to kind of, you know, get that monkey off his back and just, you know, move forward with this cycle and be done with it. I think that's needed. He had a couple close chances, so.
Gio Reyna banger to beat Mexico incoming. That's what Thomas just said. All right, I like that. All right, let's move up the field a little bit. The striker position, the forwards, if you will. We have a new addition. And you know what? He's not first on the list because alphabetically he's not first, but I'm going to say him first. Valerian Balogun from Stade de Reims / Arsenal. He is officially on the roster. He is coming to the States to play in an official competitive match. That is exciting. Brendan Aaronson with Leeds United. Taylor Booth from Utrecht, who might also be able to fill into that kind of attacking midfield space. Ricardo Pepi, who just finished a very productive season with Groningen. Christian Pulisic from Chelsea, a terrible season for him and an even worse season for Chelsea. Love to see that, personally. Tim Weah from Lille. And Alex and Dejas from Club America. And just to be clear, I'm happy to see Chelsea having a terrible season because no club deserves that except for maybe Manchester City. They both deserve all the bad things that come to them. But anyway, get Christian Pulisic away from Chelsea. That's my agenda for the summer. Let's look at this, though. Look, the attacking depth right now that we have is very good. You look at the striker position, you've got both Balogun and Pepi. You know, I don't necessarily know if I immediately start Balogun. I think you probably should, but like Pepi is the guy who knows the system, knows the team. And I could see Pepi starting against Mexico with Balogun coming off the bench just as like a, you know, not to put too much pressure on him, but he's probably a guy who wants that pressure. But anyway, striker, you got two legitimate options, left wing with Pulisic and either Booth or Aaronson. And then on the right, you've got Zendejas available. You've got Aaronson. You've got again Booth. You could put Reyna out there. The attacking options. You know, Tim Weah starting. It's very good to see all this, Thomas. It doesn't necessarily mean that it will translate to us scoring a bunch of goals, but it's just nice to see the depth of talent in this particular player group.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, Zendejas, you know, when he, you know, came on, and I said it, you know, he provides that next level depth, you know, that's above Ariel, above Morris, like it's just that next level. And that's what this team needs. You've got to have those players that can come in and fill in those roles, you know, when it's needed. So you're not burning your talent out before, you know, before these big tournaments, you know, so it's great to see. I'm looking at it and I'm like, you know, I'm excited about all of it. And so, and other than my personal preferences, I'm like, you could probably start any combination of that. And I think you have pretty good success from a talent perspective, you know, against most teams.
Well, for sure. I mean, I think that's exactly what you're saying is now we actually get to kind of choose who's playing. It does put pressure on guys to perform in camp to earn that starting spot. And that's a positive. Caleb, you know, Tim Weah has had an up and down season, but it seems like the man knows how to ball out for the U.S. Now, do you think he'll start at right wing or right back, Caleb?
Hopefully right wing. the great thing is, thanks to Lil, we know that he can play right back and left back. Tim
Weah. Maybe he is the backup left back. That's our.
You know what? That's exactly why he was brought. I got off the phone with BJ Callahan just a few minutes ago, and that's exactly what he said. Tim Weah, he can play anywhere on the field, to be honest with you. And, you know, the fact that he can play there, I think just boosts his importance to the team even more, honestly, just completely honestly speaking. But yeah, you got to think he's going to be put right there at right wing. That's his spot. Scored a World Cup goal, no big deal. He's going to come in and show what he's got.
Yeah.
And then as far as the Balogun Pepe thing, I will say, I think for Pepe's mentality, I feel like you got to give it to him. Let him be the starter. I can't imagine what kind of message that would send in saying, hey, there's a guy who's never played for us ever, and immediately he's starting over you. And then what message does that send to Balogun? Like, hey, you're the savior? No, like, come in and you got to earn your spot. So I think that's probably the safest way to go as far as, dealing with people and personalities.
I mean, I think that's a great way to look at that. And again, I think I go back to the fact that Pepe is very comfortable in the system. He's played with all the guys before. He has scored goals for the U.S. before. So I think those are all positives for him. I also just think, you know, now that going back to depth, Joey, especially, like, you can start Pepe. And if he's not performing well, you can bring on Balogun or vice versa. I feel like that wasn't something that we felt comfortable with, even at the World Cup, where, you know, you had Sargent starting, and then I know Haji Wright technically scored a goal, but, like, it didn't feel comfortable when Sargent wasn't the starter. And so now that you have two guys who can start or could be starters, that makes me just feel comfortable in case things aren't going the way we want to. We actually have solutions on the bench to possibly solve the problems. That, to me, is, I don't know, just it signifies how great the depth is of the pool, but also just, like, it makes me happy as a fan.
Yeah, you're right. Piggybacking off what Caleb said, I like his take on it, where he's saying, you know, Pepe's probably the guy, and, you know, Flynn's got to earn his spot. It's definitely true. I mean, he's definitely got to come in. He can't just, like you said, come in and be the savior for the team, and I'm going to score, you know, a hat trick every game. He's got to earn it. I think for Pepe, this is an opportunity to show, you know, you made a mistake by not bringing me to the World Cup. I think that was still a huge snub. I can't believe he didn't make the roster. That was one of the strangest decisions, along with other decisions. Also, a touch on Pulisic. I mean, yeah, terrible season. Obviously, you and me love it, but don't like it for the player. Like,
I think Caleb is also a fan of it. The fact that Chelsea finished below Tottenham is also nice for him.
Yeah. But Pulisic, you know, I just want to see, you know, what he's going to bring and how he's going to work with, you know, a better striker, but a true striker, I guess. Then we got Ricardo Pepe, Buffalo and Balogun. Yeah, it's exciting to see the options, like you said. It felt like, okay, if we play Sargent, we play this way. If we play this person, we play this way. We played a certain style based on the striker that was up top. It didn't feel like we were cohesive with the striker. The striker was trying to adapt to what everybody else was doing, and I feel it should be opposite. We should be adapting to what the striker does well as opposed to the opposite. So curious to see these two hopefully hungry strikers come into a tournament with no expectations, you know, it would be great to win, obviously, but it's not like life and death. We have to qualify, or we have to win this tournament to qualify for something else. This is a stepping stone going towards 26. Like, there's no added pressure, in my opinion,
to perform. The pressure's already coming, obviously, from the coaches and like that, but we don't have to win this. I know it's odd to say, but this is stepping towards 26. We're trying to build towards 26. These tournaments and all this other stuff is stepping stones to how we're going to play in 2026.
Well, and something that you mentioned there's, I think, been the biggest difference since Greg Berhalter was relieved of his duties is I don't think the team has played drastically different in terms of their goals on the field and the style of play, but at least for me, Thomas, maybe I think formationally there's been changes, but even watching the U20s, I felt like under Berhalter, we were beholden to this 4-3-3 with a base, you know, defensive midfielders, 2 8s and 3, you know, attackers. We had a guy cutting in on either side. It feels like there's a little bit more tactical freedom and decision-making freedom on the field without Greg Berhalter. That's not necessarily trying to criticize him or anything. It's just the – and BJ Callahan said it in the press conference today that he wants to instill principles of play, but that doesn't necessarily mean a formation. And I just feel like that's been a change since Berhalter stepped away, that we've had a little bit more freedom than we had in the past. Does that resonate with you or am I crazy?
No, I think we've seen that, but I think part of that also is that, you know, new cycle, that, you know, we haven't played any games that matter right now. So it's just, you know, kind of getting, you know, again, with all the drama that happened, you kind of want to get players just kind of comfortable being around each other and having fun again, right? Like, and kind of forget about those other things. But but there is something to that. We've seen different tactics take place. But again, with a new manager, you know, who knows what that is? I don't think we're going to see drastic changes because I just don't think they're needed. I think that we've got a pretty now experienced group, so I think there's a little bit more of freedom there. But we'll see. I mean, Mexico is, you know, they're still going to be tough to beat. And so, they're going to have some sort of game plan in place to be able to counter that or adjust as needed. And I think that's where, you know, lack of experience could impact the Nations League and the Gold Cup, going into this summer.
Yeah, let's put a bow on this talk about the roster, because I think – all the players are pretty much no quantities. There's not a whole lot more to say. The subs we talked about, there's not that many to begin with anyway. And if they aren't there, it's probably because they're injured. Josh Sargent apparently also injured. So, you know, just one of those unfortunate realities of coming off of a very long club season that included a World Cup in the middle of it. But let's move to, I don't want to say the elephant in the room, but it kind of is, because you've got the assistant of the interim now in charge of this program. BJ Callahan has been asked to step up to lead this team in both tournaments this summer because Anthony Hudson took a job, reportedly a job at a club team in the Middle East. We haven't heard anything more than that. But I won't lie and say this is fine, but I also won't lie and say that this is catastrophic. I don't know if it would have mattered all that much. I think my concerns are that BJ Callahan has never been an actual head coach before. Obviously, Anthony Hudson, though I think we all agree he wasn't great in MLS, had actually served as head coach at both the national and international and club level. So he had that experience. Caleb, where are you on a scale of like 1 to 7 on the, oh my gosh, this is a catastrophe meter?
I mean, I'm not super worried. I think the principles of play are set. I don't think a lot of things are going to change. He's gonna make the substitutions. Like, that's what he's in charge of. You know, I was reading, it said or Callahan was talking about how he said, you know, he was packing up his kids for his daughter's lacrosse tournament.
Yeah.
And Matt Crocker calls him and tells him, hey, man, we need you to step up. Like, he is a face. Let's not think that he's going to come in here and then start making moves. And all of a sudden, we're playing the most incredible style of soccer we've ever seen. Like, He's a face. Somebody's got to be in charge. He's in charge. The guys are going to play the way they're going to play, and he's going to make substitutions. I'm not too worried about it. It's going to come down to the talent on the field. And I, you know, which, let's be honest, look, Pep Guardiola is phenomenal, but I'd love to see him go take over Nottingham Forest and let's see how he does, right?
Right.
Talent wins. So I'm not worried. I just wish they'd name a freaking coach. I did see something about how Jesse Marsh, there's like a clause or something where he's owed a specific amount of money, but if he takes a job before July 1st, then he doesn't get it, something, something. I don't know. I'm just saying maybe that's what we're waiting on, but it's so frustrating. And
I just,
it's infuriating that we just continue to have to deal with this as USMNT fans over and over and over again. I don't know. Just name somebody. I'll do it. Look, I will.
Caleb for USMNT coach. You know, I think it's a valid concern though, Thomas. This is obviously going to be a lost summer. It was going to be anyway with Hudson, but I feel like it's just extra like unimportant, which sucks. I mean, Joey talked about it. You know, it's nice there's no pressure, but there's also no real stakes because what does it matter? I mean, I hate to say it that way. I think the Nations League by far matters more than the Gold Cup. The Gold Cup is just a great series of games for some, you know, guys to get experience. But I am concerned about BJ Callahan going up and coaching against, you know, the two coaches he'll possibly go against in this tournament. But like, is it, I don't know, where are you in the level of like freak out? Oh my gosh, we're falling apart.
I see. My concern is we're starting to see a pattern of this, right? And so, and this is not a good pattern. This is, you know, this, I post something, we're going to have three, you know, likely three different managers to have managed in 1 year, you know, and there's, you know, last time was, I think, I don't know, 91. And then before that, you know, I don't know, it was in the 70s, a couple times in the 70s. And so to me, that's just, it's crazy to me that we can't figure this out. And for as much as we missed out on 2018, there was no tournaments, right? Other than, you know, the missing of the World Cup, there was no Gold Cup. So we didn't miss a tournament. There was 11 matches played in 2018 that we missed out on. Well, now we're talking tournaments. And in terms of building a team and you know, continuity, you know, flipping up, getting rid of the old, bringing in some of the new talent, I think, you know, that's what these tournaments are designed to do, right? To see what you have, to see how they play, you know, with one another. And I think that's, to me, that's where I'm frustrated, right? We don't have to win these tournaments. I sure as hell want to, but those tournaments are designed to be able to do that, right? Because the next Gold Cup is very different, right? And then, you know, next summer is Copa America. So, so you kind of want to be able to, you know, put things together, be able to look at the player pool and identify that as a coach and have that opportunity, because we've got a few Nations League games. I mean, we're not going through qualifying. So you don't only have a few opportunities to maybe do some of this on a larger scale and get these teams together, you know, for some duration, right? Because that's the key, right? Seeing these people, these players in duration as opposed to just an eight-day, you know, window, you know, throughout the season.
Yeah, I mean, look, Joey, it's been – a long time since we have had a coach that, you know, I think it's frustrating that Hudson was in charge from January until now. And now we're going to have an interim for two more months. You know, I think the question comes down to how do you think the players respond to having another voice talk to them? I know it's a continuation. He was there before, but it's another person in charge. I mean, I think that's got to be the challenge for the guys in the locker room right now.
Yeah, I think it's a different voice. I mean, it's obviously a voice they've already heard for the most part, so it shouldn't be too much different. Like Caleb and Thomas have said, this is just kind of a setup for, you know, the next couple years, just trying to see what your player pool looks like. But on the back of that as well, it would be nice to have a coach who can make those decisions and implement his style and his system and see, you know, who's my ones, who's my twos, who's my threes. Okay, if this happens,
you know, how can we respond? Who do we have in our player pool? And those are the decisions that, you know, ultimately going to determine how far the U.S. goes in the next World Cup cycle. But I totally forgot about Copa America, so I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's going to be a real test of what the new coach is going to be like. He's not going against, you know, CONCACAF teams just anymore. It's going to be, you know, some heavy hitters in the Copa America. And that's the kind of talent that you need to go against to truly test yourself. I mean, CONCACAF, yes, in its own sense, is very difficult, but it's difficult because it's shitty. It's not difficult because it's overly talented or, you know, overly exuberant. Like, it's just you go to a poorly lit stadium on a choppy pitch with questionable refereeing. Like, that's why it's difficult. When you go to, obviously, you know, the Euros coming up again, it's great pitches. It's mostly good refereeing. It's the best in the world. It's just a totally different scale that they're playing on. They're playing against the best. We're playing against, you know, half the best or a quarter of the best, you know, the teams we've got to see. But Copa America, I'd like to have a coach in place probably well before that, probably looking at, you know, before November, December for sure, before the January camp, which kind of starts the cycle, so to speak, getting ready for World Cup. As Thomas mentioned, we're, you know, not to worry about qualifying. It'd be nice to top the group, but we're not going to worry because we're in, no matter if we top the group or we come in sixth. So there are six teams, right? Am I correct in that? It's 48 teams now, so we get six.
Yeah,
spots.
It's something like that.
Incorrect.
I don't. Yeah,
I think so. Like yeah. That. So I think yeah.
We're in regardless.
It is frustrating. It is frustrating. As both of you mentioned, we just keep getting, you know, the black sheep or whatever it is. But hopefully, it's a manager who is respected and not well known, but known enough. The players respond well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for me that's been the concern is, you know, Thomas, I think we hoped that the wait from when Berhalter was let go in, you know, end of December, beginning of January, the wait till they said at that point in time, even the end of the summer, was because, hey, the European seasons will end in June. Hopefully then we have a bigger player or a, you know, bigger coaching pool to choose from. But the reports that Marsh is the leading guy is really annoying because you could have hired him back in freaking March or April, whenever he got fired. Like, I understand maybe the reporting of the clause, but U.S. soccer can find a way to pony up that in some way, shape, or form. And I think that's what I'm going to be concerned or really frustrated with is if we waited all this time and the answer is Jesse Marsh.
Yeah, I think that's – I would agree with that. It's very frustrating because if you're trying to do all this candidate, it's a – bait, you know, all these things just moving around, right? There was no surprise, you know, the last time. Literally,
yeah,
Berhalter's name was the first one out there. It's the first name I heard, and I'm like, well, you know, I knew who he was, obviously, but, like, I'm like, no way. Like, that's not a great pick. You know, he hasn't won anything, hasn't done anything. And so – and they went through a whole year of nothing. There is, you know, we – talk to 33 people. Did you like, and so that's where the frustration is. Cause I mean, there are easily over a dozen, you know, candidates that have had, you know, been available. And I'm tracking it, you know, cause I will, at some point I will post something on that, but of quality that the U.S. had an opportunity to speak with, had an opportunity to, you know, to hire potentially for the job. And they're just sitting there waiting. And so how quickly managers are going to get, you know, scooped up here, you know, here in the next, I don't know, weeks, it's going to be interesting because club teams aren't going to sit around. They don't wait very long to hire managers, for replacements. So that, I guess that's my frustration is we've seen over a dozen quality, managers, you know, come and go, and we're just kind of sitting there watching it, you know, come across the screen. Like, yep, there's another one that's gone. You know what I mean? And and so, you know, for what? They've got to have a better, thing in plan to support management, as needed to replace them, because you cannot just sit there for months and months and months and just and waiting. Because I think there's a financial impact there. I just think that they can't, you know, they're like, yeah, we'll just, you know, pay the next guy, you know, what he's getting paid, and he'll do the job, and we'll wait another year and not have to pay a manager. Like, there's got to be some of that other aspect in there. Because to me, it's, you know, it's sloppy, right? For all they could do with recruiting Balkan, why can't they hire a manager, right? Because that, you know, there was an article that came out, and it was a 2.5 year journey to get him. Well, don't tell me you can't pull in managers in there, you know, in a shorter period of time. You've got to have your eyes on you know, ones that fit the system, fits your profile. But apparently now that's only American, and there's the limited options there. So,
yeah, and I mean, your point of the coaching pool dwindling is valid, because as soon as, you know, I mean, we've seen Pochettino, not that he was necessarily a legitimate candidate for the U.S. job, but he was snatched up. Obviously, Caleb would have loved that, you know, seeing Pochettino coach the U.S. men. I'm sure he would have been a very big fan. But, you know, you know, my guy that I kind of want to see is still Patrick Vieira. I think I've been pretty public with that. I think he would be a good mix of guy who clearly knows the game. I don't think he's done poorly in any of the stops. I don't think Crystal Palace was going to be much better the longer he was there, but I don't think Crystal Palace is going to be much better no matter who is there. They are what they are. But he had them playing decent soccer. He was developing some guys under him there. He knows the U.S. kind of soccer multiverse, if you will, having coached at NYCFC. He did it well enough there to get a promotion, basically go to Nice. I don't know. I just feel like there are still quality guys out there who are available and have been available. And we could have had them in place by now. I don't know. Caleb, who's the guy that you're looking at right now that you want to coach this team?
I mean, I'll go against the grain because for me, the dude is Steve Cherundolo. Because here's the thing. A superstar has to have a beginning. And I think this dude is money. I just do. I like the way he does everything. I like the way he goes about business. He knows the system. He's been in Germany for a billion years coaching and learning. I don't think it's a coincidence that he comes over, takes over a team, and then has the success that he's having. I think he is a phenomenal coach. And I don't see any massive names taking the job. So it's like, okay, well, if we're just going to give it to some random person, for me, that's the dude. I don't know. There's something about him. I just have a feeling.
But, I mean, you know, that's... I'm with you. I think if you want the best American, I think Cherundolo is the guy. Personally, and I know everyone loves Jesse Marsh. I get it. I think Cherundolo has a better pedigree, especially even when it comes to coaching. He had a lot, great deal of experience in Europe. So I'm with you. I think if you want an American, I would hire Cherundolo, but that's just me.
I will say, just to echo you, I'm with you though. If we're gonna go with a known commodity, I'd love Patrick Vieira. I just don't know if we're going to be able to do that. That's why I'd pony up and see what this guy could do. But
which is fair. Know. I mean, I get that. And that's the question is, what's the budget going to be? You know, I mean, because Thomas, that's been the concern, I think, the whole time is how much we're going to be able to pay him. I mean, look, Berhalter was only making like $1.8 million at the height. That was in a World Cup year. I mean, that's not going to lure the biggest and best managers.
No, I saw something recently that I don't know how accurate it is, because I don't know how accurate the managers' salaries are, but I think, you know, $5 million is probably the max. I can't see them ponying up much more than that. I mean, they're not going to, and I just don't think anyone would take that necessarily. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, you know, maybe they're going to get a lot of money out of this World Cup, right? Like, and so if you can bring in a manager that, you know, is going to bring that light on the U.S., I mean, there's a lot of money there. So I think that could come into it, you know, too. And there's other ways you can get them paid too, right? And so, you know, we've seen, you know, they do it in college sports. You know, we've seen it with some MLS players come from Europe. I mean, there's ways to get money in there. So I think they'd have to be creative with it. And it wouldn't be with necessarily the base salary, but there would be other ways if they want to make it work. So it'll be interesting. There's a lot of names that we've come and gone. There's a lot of names we hear. They're all rumors. You know, the Marsh one is probably the one that seems to has the most smoke right now. So, but he's also rumored to go to, you know, a couple clubs.
AS Monaco apparently now.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Joey, I mean, look, let's extrapolate a little bit on that college sports kind of thought. Is there's got to be ways for U.S. soccer to find money to pay a coach for your home World Cup, right? I mean, that can't be – that's got to be something they should be able to prioritize.
So you're going to take a page out of Mighty Ducks 2 with Hendricks Hockey, where they paid the coach through the sponsorship. They got him the TV deal. They got him the photo shoot. That's how you're going to do it. You got all this commercial money out there. Put the coach in commercials. He's a terrible actor, a great actor, doesn't matter. Put him in the commercial. That's how you pay him. And you give him, you know, bonuses. You give him promotional bonus, whatever sort of stuff. I just want – I mean, those names are awesome. I mean, those are obviously probably the top three on our wish list. I can't think of anybody else I'd want to bring in, you know, besides those three. The Cherundolo one is actually surprising to me. I didn't do my research, obviously, but you guys made some great points on, you know, that's the guy you want, former, you know, U.S. national team player himself. I mean, just, yeah, give him a shot. I mean, if you're going to take a risk, so to speak, take a risk on a known commodity.
Well, look, I think we're all in the same boat of we want them to get the right guy, and we're okay with them having taken time to find the right candidate. But I think we're all in agreement that it doesn't feel like they're actually making productive steps to find the right guy to lead this team. Is that kind of where we sit?
Yeah, I don't see a lot of transparency, you know, with this, with the pro. I mean, they talked about that, you know, 4 years ago. We'll have more transparency. We'll have more of this. If anything, you know, people at U.S. soccer have locked up pretty tight, you know, recently. Like it's any back and forth is very, two word responses. I mean, obviously they've got a lot going on, you know, in general, but it's just freaking do it already. Like at this point, like and maybe we're just waiting them out. They're like, yeah, they don't care. You know, it's a psychological experiment saying, hey, you know, if they wait long enough, they'll take whatever we get them, right? You know, at this point. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see how much they'll share with us, you know, with that process. I go back to that article in the Athletic about Balakwin. I thought that was I love the behind the scenes look at that. Mm-hmm. I love that. I mean, that's to me, that was great to see, great to read. It was a nice piece. Well done, and it gave you kind of a glimpse into that, and you know, in general, and I'm sure that he's not the only player that they're doing that with. Obviously, they were successful in that, and they didn't even think they were going to get him. So, so hopefully, with they'll do the same with the manager search. But I'm less, you know, confident in that based on what we've seen in the past.
I don't know, Caleb. I mean, how much do you think this is actually going to land the right guy? That's kind of just where I don't know.
I mean, the fact that we're talking about the United States Soccer Federation, my hopes aren't very high. I mean, I'm just trying to be real here. But we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see. I mean, like I said, talent wins out, you know. Could we have an incredible, you know, manager, Pep, all of a sudden decides he's done with Man City and he comes and coaches us? Are we winning the World Cup? I don't know. We got a lot of talent. I don't know if the manager is going to make that big of a difference. And I'm not saying that I don't care. You see what I'm saying? Like,
a bad manager could wreck this team. A good manager could take this team legitimately to the semifinals of the 2026. I think like that's where we're at. It's like a not good managerial hire means you barely get out of the group or don't get out of the group. I mean that sincerely. You know, that is the fear. But at best, you're looking at maybe one round further. And even then, that's dependent on the draw. Because, I mean, you've said it. Like, the talent is ultimately what's going to be, you know, what matters. But you have to have a manager who rallies and inspires that talent while also putting together talent that the talent in a way that can win. And I think that was our biggest critique of Berhalter at times, is that he did kind of hold us back. Yeah. Yes. I don't think he, I don't think we're going to beat the Netherlands with another coach because they are a legitimately very good soccer team, but maybe, you know, I think it would have been a higher chance than with a guy like Berhalter. That's all I'm saying. And I think that's the problem that we're maybe encountering.
Yeah. I think, I mean, he took us as far as we were going to go. Right.
That's, I think that's fair. I think
like you just said, he did the job. And that's why I'm saying, like, whoever steps in is going to do the exact same thing. Maybe if you land a once in a lifetime type manager, you get to the semis, maybe, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I don't know if we're there yet as a country. I would like to believe that. And I do think that home field in 2026 is going to make a big difference. Our guys are going to be in their prime. You know, we can make a push here. That's why the manager hire does make, like, it's extremely important.
Yeah.
But I'm not holding my breath that the U.S. Soccer Federation is going to make a giant splash in the world of soccer in hiring a manager. I just don't see it. It's going to be Jesse Marsh, and we're going to make a good run. Like, that's what I'm looking at.
Yeah. I don't know. Thomas, any final thoughts about this coaching change or the Nations League as a whole that you have?
All I'll say is that 94 cycle, they hired Bora, and he got every single ounce out of that talent, the player pool that the U.S. had. So that's my hope. If I don't, whoever that is, let's hire that person and get every single ounce out of that, because I think that's, you know, that's what we have to do to be successful, is get every ounce, you know, get everything ounce of that, you know, because we don't have the greatest player in the world. We just don't. And so we've got a great collection of players. Let's bring it together and make it work. So, but we'll see. I'm excited for this summer. I'm excited for this weekend for the U20s. So lots of soccer. I tell you, I can't get enough of it. It's been awesome.
There is a lot of soccer. Joey had to step aside. So thank you, Joey. You can follow him on Twitter at Logando5. Caleb, it's been a pleasure talking with you again, man. You know, you got to see me give a red card to a kid, so you're special. You know, that was pretty insane.
Oh, that was awesome.
Listen, it was a U11 game, and the kid said a naughty word. I had to give him a red card, and that was funny.
Oh, I love the fact that I couldn't believe it when you told me what you said. Like, wait, what?
It was a well-formulated sentence. Let's just leave it that way. It was well-formulated.
He earned that red card.
So. Yeah, it's been...
My kids learned some stuff that day.
It was fun. Yeah, it was cool. I got to actually referee one of Caleb's... He was assistant coaching, and his kid was playing. Got to listen to him be a very good coach parent to the kid. I'll give you credit for that. You weren't hard on him, but you were definitely instructive. I mean, I don't think you treated him necessarily differently than any other kid on the team. So that was good. Thanks for joining me again. You can follow him on Twitter at USMNT Corner. Thomas, thank you as well for joining us. You know, you have been here through thick and thin. So glad you're back here again. Hopefully we have some celebratory podcasts in the future, be it with U20s or the Nations League. You can follow Thomas on Twitter at US Keeper. Don't forget, you can follow this podcast on Twitter at Soccer For Us Pod. Make sure you subscribe to Soccer Down Here on whatever podcatcher you're listening right now. That way you can get all the content, not just Soccer For Us, but all the SCH content. And you can catch me on the SCH Morning Show every Wednesday when I do sometimes refereeing down here. Sometimes it's U.S. soccer down here. There's a lot of different hats that I wear there. Anyway, thank you both for being with me. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I'm Bart. I'm out.